It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
Every single woman who meets him instantly wants to sleep with him, or they're flirting with him.
Hello there, film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sozi.
You didn't say the Twitter.
The Twitter, because I'm not that old, no matter what you think. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog, which is being updated, and we will add more shenanigans to it.
Yep.
And you can read that at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
Man, whose voice you just heard is hoping Tim Tebow gets more rushing yards next week.
Yep.
That's Kobe Slagle.
Hello, hello.
He's also sending out Good Vibrations and other Beach Boy tunes to the Hansborough family because they need it. Not talking about that now because it's not sports debaggery with Matthew Sozi. It's film sociology. We have two guests. We have a chock full show today. And in fact, this I don't know if this is the first where we have two guests with their own intro. So let's try this out. First, we'll start with
Lawrence of Arabia. He's an English guy. He came to fight the Turkish.
Okay, Clark, right there.
Right there.
That's what I'm talking about. Lawrence of Arabia doesn't have any lyrics to it. Doesn't have any words.
What do you mean doesn't have lyrics?
It's music.
To it?
It's music.
I've seen the movie four times.
And there were no words to it.
What are you
There are no words to that. Did you hear what I was singing earlier?
Somewhere I know that somebody, I think, wrote lyrics to this song.
Gotta love the Hollywood Nights.
That's right. Mike Perry, the director of on-air branding and special events. Hi, Mike.
And I'll admit it, I wrote the words for Lawrence O'Reilly.
Did you?
I did.
I'm still waiting for Criterion to put out a two-disc Blu-ray of Hollywood Nights. I think.
Oh, that would rock.
We would do the commentary. It would be as liquefied and not and silly as maybe some of Kevin Smith's earlier commentary tracks.
Oh yeah,
that would be fun. So, and well. We're debuting this one. This should go over really well.
You are lying. I never hit you. You are tearing me apart, Lisa.
Lisa Trifone, the managing director of the Indianapolis International Film Festival.
I'm really sure it just happened.
And really good sport, as we can tell. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
She didn't even make eye contact when she said that. That's okay. That's all right. So,
is it safe to say that intro leaves room for improvement?
Oh.
No!
Ooh, see what he did there? See what he did? Yep. And by, you know what? I'm glad you mentioned that, Mike, because, Lisa, everybody, September 28th and 29th
yes.
at Landmark Cinemas at midnight.
That's
intent.
Right.
Which means, of course, we haven't decided which Friday where I will, I think, what, for the sixth time in the history of the show, run the infamous interview with Tommy Wiseau. I think I'm passing Terry Gross when it comes to classic interviews. We love Terry, but, you know, if you're involved with The Muppets, The Wire, what else, Mad Men, a few other shows, you're going to get aired several times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, and, of course, much to the chagrin of certain management, we have Tommy Wiseau in the room.
Yes. So, and if you're hearing this, like, oh God, midnight show.
Yes.
I don't know about that.
I'm an old person, and I will adjust my sleep clock for the weekend for the room.
Yes.
Most definitely.
You have to go. You have to see a screening of this in public. You have to go at midnight. It is the most fun you're going to have at a movie.
I agree with you. However, sir, now it sounded like Matt and Kobe in the morning. I think you should watch the film on its own. So you can be astounded as to what you're getting yourself into. Then you see it with an audience. But that's just me.
Is it like a Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Yes. Oh, yes. Like, they dress up. Yeah, they throw spoons. Yeah. They sing. They yell stuff. Some of it is
non-stop.
Scripted. Some of it is not. I, of course, am a fairly decent riffer, if I do say so myself. Your girlfriend said so. Anyway, and there's no context in that. So, it is a lot of fun. Not since Rocky Horror has there been such a ridiculous evening of midnight cinema. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I took my now wife there, and
that's right.
And she married she married me anyway.
Wow.
That's what my wife. She married me anyway too. So.
Good woman.
So
it's the movie you can't get enough of, and what does that really say about us?
The show rocks. What do you? There's a Wesley Willis lyric which I can't recite, but that's the goal every week with film sociology, with a belt or a rubber hose. Thank you, fans of Wesley Willis. All right. So that's coming up on the 28th and 29th, and there's more midnight movies coming out in October at Landmark Cinemas, which we'll talk a little bit about. A lot of films coming out this week.
Are the grown-up movies about to come out?
No. I was just looking at the picture in the non-nuvo of the photo for Resident Evil Retribution. So not entirely. So, yeah, Mila Jovovich and her husband, we get to see them.
Are definitely getting even with us.
Yes,
that's
they're
the title.
So that's, what is this, the sixth one, seventh one? I've lost track.
It's too many, whatever it is.
There's a film called Life is Beautiful, but it is not the Roberto Benigni film. It's an Indian film, so there's that. Last Ounce of Courage with Jennifer O'Neill and my guy, Fred Williamson, along with Marshall R. Teague. We can tell you, it's time to take a stand, and it's a story of family, faith, and freedom.
I thought you were going to say my guy, Robert Irvine.
No, Robert Irvine is not in the film. I'm working on that script. He's just angry because he should have been the butt-whooping cook in Under Siege, not Mr. Seagal. So, wow, Fred Williamson's getting the spiritual money. Well, so long as the check's clear. And then couple things we're checking out. One is Finding Nemo in 3D. Now, I've not seen the 3D version of it, and I tend to grumble over people putting 3D on top of 2D movies. Yeah. High Titanic that's out on DVD and Blu-ray this week. But, and this is also the thing, this is kind of the old Disney trick. It's, you know, this is the first time it's been in theaters since its initial release in 2002? Maybe? So... Yeah. But I will say, if you get a chance to take your kids, and they're old enough to behave in a theater, you know who you are, and they can, I think this would be a golden opportunity for you to shut off your phone while we're doing the program, Kobe.
I gotta hit a button.
Jeez. But it is also a golden opportunity to show kids this film on the big screen. I, of course, take big screen over... Kobe's gone. I take a big screen over... Your TV, I don't care how great your TV is, or your laptop, or your phone. And, yeah, don't show Finding Nemo on a phone.
No.
That's like showing Lawrence of Arabia on a phone, and that makes no sense.
I don't want to see Raiders of the Lost Ark on my phone.
No, nobody does.
No.
I'm sorry.
Well, if you're going to milk every last dollar out of a re-release with a 3D presentation, Finding Nemo is at least one that there's some creativity behind it, like... Fish swimming around in the ocean, you know. There's
right.
Something to it.
We've done that. We've been at the hospital in the waiting room. We've seen that.
I mean, there's something to that there. I think that the stretches for 3D could be worse.
Though they are. Clash of the Titans, Titanic, Wrath of the Titans, Last Airbender.
At least Nemo has the things I look I really like in a 3D movie, and that's a lot of underwater stuff.
Yes. And speaking whale.
And speaking whale. And having seen the 3D trailer in a theater, I kind of like what they did with the shark in 3D.
Yes, because he's our friend, yeah. Not food. Yeah. So, I know I usually pull up my black socks and tell you darn kids get off my lawn. But, I think especially if your kids have never seen it in the theater.
Right.
And I have to say, this was a very reassuring sign as a parent in the younger days. But there is a period where children will want to, especially in these days, that where a child will want to watch the same thing even several times a day, every day, for months.
Oh, my God.
Months on. Yours was Wizard of Oz? Mm-hmm.
My daughter was the Neverending Story. She took that title way, way too literally.
Mine was Foxy Brown. No.
And it explains so much.
I know. Thank you. No, but for Emma, she had two. It was Finding Nemo and Monsters, Inc.
Mm-hmm.
And she would alternate. So I don't know. She must have got it from her mother, but I don't know where she got the idea to alternate. But man, I breathed a big sigh of relief that it wasn't one film and it wasn't Scooby-Doo. So, you know, I say thank you, Emma, kids film correspondent, for that. Cole, what was the movie you had to watch every day when you were a child? Not Foxy Brown. I already took that one. Do we have to call your folks?
Probably Rescuers Down Under.
Really?
Yep.
You had animated George C. Scott in your system. Wow. And I showed Emma Neverending Story. I think the animation freaks her out a little bit.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, it can be a little creepy.
Yeah, a little creepy. So
a little European creepy.
Euro creepy. Wolfgang Peterson creepy.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten her to the second one yet because we got the double feature disc. So we'll see.
I never saw much point in Neverending Story 2 because if you have a story that never ends, why do you need a sequel to it?
Well, just like in, what was it, the lyric in Eye of the Tiger, the last known survivor stalks his prey. How is he stalking prey if he's the last known survivor? Don't know.
Yeah, we think too much about this stuff.
But that's what we do here at Film Associate. We think too much about nonsensical things. So, however, also opening in theaters today is, believe it or not, the third collaboration between filmmaker Jonathan Demme and Neil Young. And it's called Neil Young Journeys. Not Neil Young Singing Journey, God no. No, this is far better. Here's the audio.
That used to be the mill down there where I used to catch fish and when I was just 5 years old or whatever. This is a town in North Ontario. Certainly doesn't look anything like it did before, but I can smell it. There it is.
When we go for a little walk out on the land.
So I lived in this pup tent out here during the summer so I could be out closer to my chickens.
I feel your strength.
I think that's why I was out there.
My dad, of course, was very famous in Canada because he was a great writer. And this is the school they named after my dad.
They're widening the road, the trees are gone, the golf course across the road is being converted to a subdivision.
I'm on this journey, I don't want to walk alone.
Seeing the house after it had burned down, and it was right here.
That's beautiful.
It's better to burn out than to fade.
It's in my head. That's why you don't have to worry when you lose friends. Because they're still in your head. They're still in your heart.
Now, I have to say, I did not see the second one of these. Full disclosure, I'm a fan of Neil Young. Sorry, Kobe, that's white rock from the 60s and 70s. Be quiet. But it's Canadian rock. Doesn't that make any? No, it doesn't. But the first one, Heart of Gold, I remember I loved it so much, I put it in my top 10 that year. And because it was, and this was the one that was shot in Nashville, Heart of Gold. And it was, the focus was the performance itself. There was a little bit of Neil talking at the beginning, but it was he and a fairly large band by Neil Young standards. And it was just what was happening on stage. No backstage stuff, no reaction shots from the crowd, just the music itself. And I absolutely love that. Now, not seeing the second one, and now seeing this one, obviously they had to go in a different direction.
Yeah.
And with this one, it is shot in Toronto, and you see Neil in an old car traveling to his boyhood area with his brother. His brother's there. And it's interesting because if you listen to the trailer and watch it, there is more stuff about the stuff that's in the trailer. It's not in the film, which means it'll be out on the DVD and Blu-ray, about his dad being a famous writer. Mm-hmm. And there's some references. You wonder if it was going to happen of, you know, they drive through what used to be, you know, just greenery and trees. And now it's, you know, they pave paradise and put up a parking lot or a strip mall. And that's mentioned in the trailer, not used in the film. And I'm wondering if for the film purposes, they concentrate mostly about the music and a little bit of Neil. And Neil doesn't have to be a grumpy old man in this.
Now, say, having seen the trailer, I was expecting it to go the other way. I was expecting more kind of pseudo-doc about, you know, like Neil Young going home.
No.
And not so much music.
No, it's music. It is music. I mean, but there are cutaways in between songs, and this is a solo performance. I got the only time I've seen Neil Young, and it was the Harvest Moon tour, but it was just him and the acoustic guitars and the keyboard, the piano, and the pipe organ. For you fans of Hearts of Space on Sundays.
Tick-tock.
And this one, it is acoustic, pipe organ, piano, and electric guitar. So, yes, the electric guitar with the whammy bar and the fuzz and the, you know, all that stuff. This is from a 2011 tour. So it's music from, I believe it was Love and War, the 2010 album, and some of the classics. One of the things that I was pretty impressed with, and I'm surprised it had not been done before in some music video, but he does do a solo electric version of Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there is the obligatory footage of the riots that we've all seen hundreds of times on campus. But you see the photos of the four that, except for maybe when I did research on this in high school, I don't really remember seeing the four faces. So that was pretty powerful. Now, on the flip side, there's also moments of the camera being inside the organs as you're watching Neil play. There's also a camera under the microphone. So I'm warning you people, you're going to see the lower half of Neil Young's, you know, kind of old, and he's got whiskered face singing at you. So maybe probably a good idea not in 3D. And there's a moment that I guess you can tell that this was done with one performance, because there is a song, and I still don't know if it was sweat or spittle, but it hits that camera, and it stays.
Ew.
It stays. So it's real, man. It's happening.
Verite.
Yeah, it's happening, man. No cutaway. I mean, there's a little cut, but the fact that it stayed there, and of course, you're watching this going, what roadie, what lackey's going to run on stage during the solo, or maybe at the end of the song, and, you know, and take care of that. So, anyway, if you're a fan of Neil Young, definitely worth checking out. I like Jonathan. I like the fact that Jonathan Demme kind of bounces back from feature to documentary, and so yeah, I think it's worth checking out.
Now that was a good movie.
Now, also opening in theaters, and I have to say extra special thanks to Lisa for hanging out before the big event tonight. But there is, for the first time ever in cinema history, a film based on a comics one-man show or stand-up, and also based on a piece from This American Life, but Mike Birbiglia's Sleepwalk with Me, which is directed by Ira Glass.
No,
sorry.
No.
Produced by Ira Glass.
Right. Ira Glass is a producer. It's written and directed by Mike Birbiglia, and he's got, there's like a co-director, co-writer kind of credited.
Yeah, because if Ira directed it, there'd be a desk everywhere.
Exactly. Ha ha ha. One person sitting at a desk.
That's the obligatory This American Life joke that we do. Because anyway. So for those, I mean, Lisa, you got to see this in Austin because you're cool. We're not allowed in Austin.
I saw it back in March at South by Southwest, and it was one that it had gotten rave reviews at Sundance, and I stood outside the theater. I got there about an hour and a half, 2 hours early. I was about the 15th person in line for the movie, so got in. He was there. Producers were there. It's just a great, charming film. It's off the beaten path. It's not your everyday fare of either a romantic comedy where the 20-something girl is sappy and, you know, will she end up with the guy at the end, or a hacker film, or, you know, some of these like dime a dozen movies that you're seeing in theaters.
Yes.
It's original. It's unique. It's well written and well acted. It's got a build to it. You know, he sets it up. If you've seen the trailer, there's some breaking of the fourth wall. He's talking right to you in some of this.
There's a moment
scenes.
I remember where you're supposed to be rooting for me.
Exactly. Exactly. For something that's based on, by way of context, I guess it's based on, it was actually a bit that he performed at the Moth in, I believe Chicago.
Ah, yes, which you can also hear Saturday nights at 10 on HD1.
And then, This American Life picked it up and he went on tour with it and it became this big thing and he adapted it into a movie. But basically he's got, it's not giving anything away to say that he's got, what's the word I'm looking for?
Disorder.
It's, disorder. Yeah. Thank you.
That's the title. Sleepwalk with me.
It's more than just sleepwalking. He finds himself in precarious situations, and it's usually he's having these dreams, these visions, and so they do a good job. There's preventing sort of the hokiness of dream sequences. They do a good job of the cutting and.
You mean Peter Dinklage isn't running around?
You know, you're safe from that. So it's really fun, and he and Ira Glass have been doing an incredible job and kind of like a new. Almost a tour in and of itself of the film. It's been this tiered release, so it's been out in theaters for a few weeks now. It opens in Indianapolis tonight.
And
Mike Birbiglia actually is in town. He was on the Bob and Tom show this morning. And
who?
Just kidding. No one.
you mean the people that kept me from getting my gold medal at Nuvo? I'm sorry. Go on.
But we're not bitter.
No. He probably went to, you know, eat at Yachts, and he's just been bopping around town today because he's going to be at the shows at Landmark this evening. He's going to do a Q&A and an intro and everything. And this is something he's been doing for the last several weeks. He was in New York when it opened. He was in L.A. He goes to Minneapolis tomorrow. He's been kind of all over the place.
Man, that's a haul.
Yeah,
I've done indie to mini. That's, ooh, boy. I'm assuming he's flying, not like us people who drive.
Yes, I would hope so. But, I mean, it's refreshing to sort of see somebody so jazzed about, like, he's just so grateful that people are responding to the film, it seems like, so.
So, yeah, if you can make it tonight, that's cool.
Yes.
And, of course, yeah, it opens at Landmark, so.
Yes.
And we got to see him at the.
Mirah.
At the Mirah.
At the
so,
Egyptian Room a
couple years back. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. Nice guy. Yeah, he's a comic. He's a stand-up, and he's a stand-up comic in the film,
mm-hmm.
but he's not instantly a star, but it's not punchline either.
Right.
So
right.
He's improving.
There's some charm to it. There's a journey there. So it's a fun. It's not just a hey, I'm a stand up and I'm gonna throw a bunch of my one liners on screen. You know.
So there it is. Now what else, you know what? We have a lot going on in Central Indiana right now. So you people have no excuse unless you're listening to this show live, which we appreciate it. tonight at IU Cinema. Well, he's apparently been there for several days, but
yeah.
They've been doing a Werner Herzog. Retrospect, and I'm still waiting for Mr. Herzog to come into our studios and do voiceover work for us, because that would rule, and you know you want it. But tonight, they're showing Grizzly Man, which the kids' film correspondent, she's gotten about halfway through it. So, anyway, he is down there. He's doing Q&A for that, and I think that's it. But you have to check IU Cinema's website. There is the B-Movie Celebration going on at Yes Cinema in Columbus. And there's apparently Gila, an Indiana-produced remake of the giant Gila monster, which is actually the original, one of the best Mr. Science Theater treatments ever.
I've been waiting so long for
an
a remake
Indiana-based
of that.
Remake
yeah.
of the giant Gila monster. And it's I think, you know, just really extreme, not the remake, but the original, you know, extreme close-ups of a lizard and then cutaway reaction shots of grown people going, ah! that? You know, I mean, and there's one, it looks like the director's pushing the poor Gila monster's head through a paper wall for a dance. I mean, it's just wonderfully ridiculous. The Oatmeal Man. Yeah, and it's
That's a superhero power want.
It's no, he's tagged as the ultimate serial killer. Man Clam, the shell from hell. That's also
the movie
there.
Can't live up to the title.
Let's see, Earwigs. That's one. Cats on a Pedal Boat. So yeah, that is bmoviecelebration.com, I believe, is the title for that. But yeah, that's going on this weekend. Whoo boy. So. And, of course, Indie Jazz Fest is tomorrow and Sunday at Opti Park, where you'll see a certain WFYI personality I'm seeing. And Slide Hamptons at the Kitchen tonight.
And Irish Fest, where you'll WFYI producer drinking.
And Elizabeth Banks correspondent. And Celtic Woman correspondent. What else? Trip the Bountiful is this Saturday, tonight, tomorrow night, and Sunday afternoon at Mud Creek Players. The beautiful Horton Foot drama directed by a certain WFYI personality. Okay, so we got all that. Let's take a short break. We'll talk about what's new on DVD and Blu-ray. Hopefully we'll get to Dead People We Like, and we'll go into the archives. And, oh, we got to talk about something else that's still in theaters, which if you haven't seen that yet, you really should. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
From Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Riff Tracks, and in case you didn't know it, and you probably should, you are listening to Film Sociology on WFYI.
Are either one of these any good? Sir?
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So, do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@wfyi.org, also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Soci. Lisa Trifone, the managing director of the IIFF, is here, as well as Mike Perry, director of on-air branding and special events. And we'll get to what's new on DVD and Blu-ray in a little bit, but I'm going to keep short time with this. It was a slow week when it came to movie titles. It opened, what, a couple weeks ago, still in theaters. If you have not seen this, you really should. And hopefully, this is the film. I'm putting a lot of pressure on this film and William Friedkin. This is the film that could hopefully, I wish, put NC-17 in a slightly different light. And I'm talking about the film Killer Joe with Emil Hirsch, Thomas Hayden Church, Juno Temple, Gina Gershon, and Matthew McConaughey, who we might as well just stop now and give that man the comeback player of the year. And that's something my two guests and I have actually watched. Not together. That would be fascinating. It's not creepy. But it is a delicious slice of Texas noir about a not so smart kid played by Emil Hirsch and his even dumber father played by Thomas Hayden Church, who have Kobe, I thought you shut that off for the second time already. That is going off. You know what? We'll talk about Killer Joe. You do what you do. Emil Hirsch, Thomas Hayden Church, trailer guys in Dallas, in the outskirts of Dallas, and Emil has run into some problems with the local independent businessmen, and he's up to his neck in debt, and he decides to talk his dad into bumping off their mom to get the insurance policy. So they need to hear about a guy, the title of the movie, a Texas Ranger who is also a hitman on the side, played by McConaughey. Well, the smart kid, not really smart, decides, well, if he could do the job and then collect the money from the insurance settlement, everything will be okay. McConaughey's character, being a businessman, says, no, we don't do that. He sees the younger daughter, who's 12 in the film, played by Juno Temple, and decides to use the 12-year-old girl as collateral.
Do they establish that she's that young?
Yes. Yeah, because we did not, because we're men, and we're like, that's really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So, and Gina Gershon shows up. And by the way, how should I word
this? She shows a lot of stuff.
She shows a lot of Gina Gershon. More so, I would say, than Showgirls.
More than Bound.
I hear basement doors flying open now, and people running to go see this film.
Here's the thing: it's a film to experience. It's not necessarily a film you go in to enjoy. It's not a.
Oh,
film,
I think you can, but I'm weird. So.
It's not a film because I think that there's something to be said. Like, I would also encourage folks to go out and see it, but it falls in a very different bucket than the Finding Nemo 3D that we also recommended.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't take your children to Killer Joe. It's NC-17 for a reason.
And speaking of buckets, you're not going to want to stop at KFC after this movie.
Oh, yeah, I was getting to that.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's all right. But it is. I called it Texas Noir. You have the protagonists, or in this case, protagonists, who are trying to do something to better their lives, and they just keep digging themselves deeper and deeper and deeper. But it's also a dark comedy. There's some truly funny moments in it. They're uncomfortable. But the film is NC-17. Now, I've had long issues with the movie ratings, mm-hmm. as we've talked about for periods of time here at the. Yes, that's a great example.
The movie everyone should see.
Yes,
I'm a movie fan.
Yes, especially because the film rating that labeled once also labeled hostile. Thanks. This one it is NC-17 because of nudity, male and female. Yes, ladies, you get to see Matthew. I can now those basement doors are flying open. There is that. There are some pretty brutal, violent moments.
God, yeah.
Very violent.
And there is a scene involving Gina Gershon, Matthew McConaughey, and a piece of fried chicken. But also, as I'm watching this, I'm like, is this the most nudity-wise? Is this the most graphic? No.
No.
Is it the most violent film? No. It's unnerving, and there's a few moments, especially with Emil Hirsch, there because of his trailer sister. There's a few dream sequences that don't really go that far, but enough. It implies enough, and there's some really creepy and effective scenes involving Juno Temple and Matthew McConaughey, where McConaughey is basically courting this young girl, which makes his performance, I think, all the better. But this is a grown-up film, and I think Roger Ebert said for years there needs to be an A rating, meaning adults only. And meaning it's a grown-up movie. It's not pornography, which, of course, X and NC-17 have been slapped with over the years, decades.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, I'd like to think, because I'm one of those, like, make love, not war kind of proponents. Like, I don't know why we penalize sexuality and nudity in films.
Because America's really uptight about such things.
I think that the adult rating in the it's for grown-ups category, not adult in sort of the
porno sense.
Exactly.
I mean, because I've often said my daughter has seen grown-up movies, but not adult movies, because that's you get child services after on that. That's bad.
But I mean, I think if you're talking about it as far as filmmaking goes. It's adapted from a play. It's a tight script. It's a well-written sort of arc. You know, they waste no time in getting to the point of the film, and you are right along in the ride. They make enough of a villain out of the mother that they want to bump off.
We never really see.
You know, so in that regard, it goes at a good clip. It's shot well. The casting for all of those recognizable faces, for all of those roles.
And William Friedkin, for those, he did a play adaptation of Bug, which is another warped film with Ashley Judd and Michael Shannon.
So I think that if you understand sort of, and it, honestly, I thought of it's not nearly as violent or dark, but I thought of Shame from last year. Michael Fassbender.
I'm sorry, the film's known as Michael Fassbender's Penis.
Right.
Yes.
I was gonna go with, you know, something more tactful, but that's okay. I'll leave that to you.
The host.
But you know,
but yeah, that's another one. I mean, that was a film that treated sex addiction without an ounce of snark, without a tongue in cheek, so to speak.
But you know what you're getting into.
Correct.
And so as long as you know what you're getting into, that this is going to be a film that's going to be, it might make you potentially awkward. Like, I think that's what the filmmaker's going for, and that's what the story is. It's a really well done film. It's a very well made film.
Mike,
she said it all. I mean,
yes, dear. We're trained to say that. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was considering the rating this movie got. I was expecting more of the elements that usually get us an NC-17,
and we've seen that.
And for me, what bought it the NC-17 had to be the relationship between Matthew McConaughey and Juno Temple in this movie, because it does cross some uncomfortable lines.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the other elements of this movie we've seen in other movies.
Yeah, and the McConaughey character, like I said, this is the man. This is his year, Bernie, where he's quite good in it. I mean, and it's a character role. He can still be one of the most handsome people on earth and play character roles, and he does that as the district attorney in Bernie. Magic Mike, which I said his role was a combination of Burt Reynolds in Boogie Nights. And I know he's a Burt Reynolds fan, and Joel Grey in Cabaret. This, you know, kind of the leader who's not entirely showing all of his cards. And now this, where, and all three of those films have the charm that people like McConaughey in, so long as he's not doing god-awful romantic comedies. The charm and the little menace, I mean, that, of course, put him on the map because of Dazed and Confused, but it's the combination of utilizing his talents and putting him in the right direction, because the scenes with Juno Temple, they are more touching than you think they would be, but as soon as you say that, you went, this is really creepy. So yeah, the courting scenes are really dangerous and really effective.
It makes you wonder if this is the same Matthew McConaughey that was in Fool's Gold or whatever that was with.
Well, you know what, he got big checks and owns half of Kilgore, because... Texas, and I know he's got I know that he has a foundation. There's some charity thing.
Sure.
So I'm like, okay, fine, stop doing those now.
Right. Like, you know, you're giving yourself a bad rap, because it's going to only get a small audience, and it's unfortunate because he's so compelling in it that he could shake the dopey reputation that he's got.
Right.
But a film like this, unfortunately,
it's a limited audience.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Do we have Sir Ben? Because it's worth that.
Yes!
So, yes, we're telling you. Yes, Film Sociology is telling all of you, go see an NC-17 film and get over your bad self. All right, new on DVD and Blu-ray.
That was funky.
Let's keep that. New on DVD and Blu-ray, Snow White and the Huntsman, which means, yes, ladies and gentlemen, as the host of Film Sociology and the father of a 10-year-old daughter, I have now seen both of the Snow White films from 2012.
I'm sorry.
And you probably haven't, but that's my job. So,
I've seen
yes.
Seen one.
What?
Seen this one.
Yeah, you saw this one?
Yep.
Okay, this is the one with Kristen Stewart, who's still not having fun, and Charlize Theron. This is also the film that, like Mirror, Mirror. Mirror, Mirror, of course, was the film that lets everybody know it's okay for Julia Roberts to be old. And apparently in this film, it is okay for Charlize Theron to be old. She plays the queen. And then, of course, we have Chris Hemsworth. That's Thor for you basement nerds. But he's in this as well. He is the huntsman. And then
I'll double down on the nerd, and I remember him as Captain Kirk's father. So
that's good. That's actually Yes, that is right. So, anyway, this is a film that's for the Twilight crowd that they tried to with Little Red Riding Hood and nobody really saw. And now we have this one. Now, the story is Mirror Mirror was going to come out first. And this is, of course, from the director of The Fall and The Cell, you know. And word got out that Universal was putting out a dark and serious action, violent version of Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. So Mirror Mirror became much lighter in tone, and there's little bitty elements of the filmmaker in there, especially the scenes with the mirror. And I wish Mirror Mirror had some of the darker tone that this film has. That being said, Snow White and the Huntsman takes itself way damn too serious.
Yeah.
Way, first off, too long. It's 2 hours and 11 minutes.
Holy smokes.
Does not need to be that. Could be 90 minutes easily. And, I mean, where do you cut it? Everywhere.
Yeah.
Hers is, you know, let's get to Kristen Stewart. Let's get to, and there's a lot of Charlize Theron screaming in this film. I'm tired. I love looking at Charlize Theron. I got tired of her yelling at me. Me personally. And lots of fight scenes and lots of slow-mo fight scenes. And yes, even the dwarves, even though they're not dwarves, they have the faces of Toby Jones and Brendan Gleeson, Bob Hoskins, who this might be his last film. That's a bummer. Ian McShane, who doesn't call anybody our favorite name from Deadwood. He could. All of it could be 40 minutes shorter. And you have the almost Hans Zimmer Inception-esque score going on with these big Troy fight scenes. The film looks cool. It is visually impressive. Lots of good use of white and dark and black, of course. And there's a lot of liquid CGI that makes the stuff from Terminator 2 look tame by comparison. But, man, too long, too serious, lightened up. Do we have Steven screaming? Do we have that? That's actually a good opinion of Snow White.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Yeah, just relax, okay, Snow White and the Huntsman? Yeah. Fair Sweet Bianca liked it, didn't she?
Uh-huh.
So did Emma.
Yeah.
Those two should hang out.
Well, I liked it, too, but I...
It could have been a lot better.
It could have been shorter.
It could have been shorter. I would like to have seen more dwarves.
Well, there's seven.
Yeah.
What more do you want? You mean longer time.
Some of the most entertaining stuff in that movie is the interaction between the dwarves.
Eddie Marsden. Eddie Marsden's one of them as well. So.
And to me, the more interesting movie that was made was The Huntsman and Snow White.
Yeah, I mean the title.
I was more drawn into the Huntsman's backstory than I was Snow White.
And here's the thing, folks. Get ready for this. I know this is going to shock some people. But there's also not just the Huntsman, who Chris Hemsworth still looks like roided up Brad Pitt. Mm-hmm. There's also a boy from Snow White's past. Let's see. We have another film where Kristen Stewart is torn between two guys. And guess what? The film sets itself up, a spoiler alert, whatever, it's been months. But you're setting yourself up for another film with this.
Oh, yeah.
So another film where she's torn between two guys. At least these two don't quite have the anger issues as the other film franchise, and I'm sure I'll get an angry text from Fair Sweet Bianca.
Well, I've also read stories or reports that the sequel may be more about the Huntsman. And not quite so much. Some of the fallout from the, behind the scenes stories in this movie.
She's a little less lip bitey in this one.
And hair tussling.
Yeah.
Well, she does strap on some armor and kick some butt in her own way. So.
I would just like her to have more than one facial expression. I mean, she looks like she's
not having fun.
No, and she looks she does the Botox.
Christian Bale tells you to lighten up and enjoy it, I mean, you really should. Okay. Also out on DVD and Blu-ray, What to Expect When You're Expecting. Great, let's move on. I'm sorry, I don't need any more movies based on self-help books. Woody Allen mastered this in 1972 with Everything You Want to Know About Sex, but We're Afraid to Ask. Moving on. Okay, DVD and Blu-rays. Here's the question, ladies and gentlemen. This is a panel discussion. It's like Indiana Week in Review, only it's with movies and it's us. Would you buy this on Blu-ray, the Collector's Edition Titanic 3D?
No.
I have to say yes.
I have a question for my fair guest. How old were you when this film came out?
That's exactly where I was just going with this. I was in high school.
All right.
And okay. I was one of those, like, I probably saw it four or five times in the theater.
Okay.
And I've got a Blu-ray player, and I've got a big screen TV. I would probably just for.
But do you have a 3D TV?
The nostalgia's sake. Okay. Yeah.
That's fine.
I would have it in my life.
Like, you've never rolled your eyes at any of the film titles I brought. I brought up Foxy Brown earlier, okay? So, no. It's all right.
Foxy Brown, thanks to you.
Yes, you're welcome. Let's see. So, anyway, that's out on... there's a 3D edition, and there's a collector's edition. I don't know if it's shaped like, Gloria Stewart or Boat or the car that Kate Winslet's in, whatever. So, that's there. Jeepers Creepers.
No.
Oh! Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Wrong.
The one with Dennis Hopper. This is one from the 80s. No.
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 Okay, The Ring?
No.
No.
No, Kobe, no.
Relax, Kobe.
How do you really feel?
No.
Kobe's not a scary, freaky movie guy, so. The Firm.
No.
The Firm. Tom Cruise running it for the last night. I remember this was a big turning point for me as a writer because... I read the novel, the John Grisham novel, in less than a day. And John Grisham's novels scream, film me.
Right.
And the first hour and a half is really engaging and thrilling. And then the last hour, it's Tom Cruise running in nice clothes.
Yeah.
And nothing like the novel. And, of course, I think John Grisham complained to Sidney Pollack and went, and Sidney Pollack replied, well, did you get the check? Did you cash it? Go away. So there's that. By the way...
I was just going to say, that's one that I might not go, click over to Amazon and buy it today. But if I saw it in, the $5 bin at Walmart something.
Now that I'm no longer in school and I don't have a 2 in my age and I think I've lightened up in certain aspects, I might watch it again. Trivia. Anybody know the girl who was the blackmail photos in The Firm with Tom Cruise?
Uh-uh.
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Really?
Now Mike's going to go rent it.
Interesting.
As am I. So.
Oh, you just made a Blu-ray worthy.
Okay, here's a triple feature because they just love to slap all of these on. Braveheart, Gladiator, and Saving Private Ryan.
Yes.
Lisa says
yes.
Yeah.
Okay, there's that. Yeah. Kobe, I'm already going to answer this one for you. No. The Paranormal Activity Trilogy.
You would be correct.
I'm with you, Kobe.
Okay.
I don't know. I could be talked into that.
Who's going to talk you into that, Mike?
The Marm.
The Blu-ray? Oh, I like the Paranormal Activity movies.
Oh, okay.
They're
suspenseful.
Okay.
They're not in-your-face horror films. They're
freaky, Kobe.
They are freaky.
if it whiffs of freak, Kobe's not watching it.
Nope.
Yeah.
Until my team beat your team in fantasy football.
Nope, that's not.
It happened last year.
It did happen last year.
And,
but
2 in a row.
Well.
I'm sorry. Welcome to Fantasy Football Taunting on Film Sociology.
Different topic.
Okay. Of course, as I say, every week it seems like one of the studios, they take turns on just unloading a bunch of old titles for the hell of it. So this week it's Miramax. Here are their double features, The Human Stain and The Crossing Guard. Jack Nicholson going after David Morse, directed by Sean Penn, or Anthony Hopkins as a black person.
Yeah, no.
And everyone's favorite school custodian, Nicole Kidman. Yeah. Texas Rangers and Dead Man. A Jim Jarmusch Western with Johnny Depp and Robert Mitchum, and a Western with Colin Farrell. Deception and Ethan Frome, the Liam Neeson double feature from the 90s, one with Andy McDowell, the other with Patricia Arquette, based on the Edith Wharton novel, also starring Joan Allen. I actually saw this film in theaters. And, a Jane double feature, Becoming Jane and Jane Eyre.
I'm going to go with yes.
With Anne Hathaway.
With those two.
And Jane Eyre, I believe this is the Franco Zeffirelli version with William Hurt from the Midnighters, which I also saw in theaters. I don't think it's the one with the recent one. Yes, the one with Michael Fassbender, who keeps his clothes on, and the girl from Alice in Wonderland.
Wazaluka.
How is it?
Isn't it Wazaluka?
It is now. So we can't say it. We just, the
Mia.
Alice in Wonderland.
Mia.
Girl.
She's just going to be Mia for the rest of her life.
So anyway, that is all. And of course, I said Becoming Jane with Anne Hathaway. And I said Scott Hoke once thought it's a film involving Nancy Culp. Chief! Thank you. And finally, Blindness and Proof.
Nope.
The one with Julianne Moore, Mark Ruffalo, and my favorite movie president, Sandra Oh. And the proof with Gwyneth Paltrow being the daughter of Anthony Hopkins.
And Jake Gyllenhaal, right?
And Jake Gyllenhaal and Hope Davis, directed by John Madden.
Not that John Madden. That's actually one of those play adaptations that didn't go all that well.
Right.
I don't think it went all that well at all.
So there's that. Oh, and Paramount, for some reason, has a triple feature of Hondo, John Wayne, and Geraldine Page. Once Upon a Time in the West, the Sergio Leone masterpiece with Henry Fonda, Charles Bronson, and the original True Grit.
Wow.
Okay, I already have two of those
three. So you don't really need that.
No.
Okay, also out on Blu-ray, JCVD, because, you know, The Expendables 2 went over so well, so there's a Jean-Claude Van Damme resurgence, and Steel Magnolias.
Now, that one.
We like that in the Soce household. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that being said, thank you for all of those titles. Everybody, you know what you'll buy. It's time to go into the archives. And we talk about taking turns with the studios. The studios are fleecing film sociology hosts everywhere because they have films that they will burn onto a CD or a DVD for you that they cannot sell in stores. You can only get it through their website. And this is the equivalent of...
Yeah, I'll burn it for like $5.
Only in Warner Brothers' case, it's $20 usually. This week, I'm talking about another film directed by Ken Russell. Last week, I talked about the only Ken Russell film I can show my child, the G-rated musical The Boyfriend, that starred Twiggy. So yes, David Lynch, David Mamet, and Ken Russell have all made G-rated movies. Thank you, MPAA. That was last week. This week, I go with, and I'm so happy this is out on DVD finally because I can get rid of my VHS copy or pass it on to somebody else, the 1976 mind mess known as Listomania. Ooh. Are you ready for this? Lisa has no clue. I can't wait to share this with her. It is a biopic of Franz Liszt, played by Roger Daltrey.
Who else, really?
Really. Well... You know, he had that brief period of working with Ken Russell. Of course, they had such profound success in the other mind mess film known as Tommy. And in fact, the ad campaign says, it out Tommy's Tommy. So this is a film that he's playing Franz Liszt, the famous Hungarian composer. And of course, because it's the mid-70s, and Kobe.
It was a different time.
70s were a different time. They, of course, treat Franz Liszt as if he was music's first ever rock superstar. So there are girls with bonnets in the theater screaming Franz Liszt's name endlessly. There is backstage debauchery, and there's composers that you've recognized, including Wagner, who comes off in the film literally as Hitler, Frankenstein, and a vampire. Mm-hmm. And sometimes all at once. There's a scene with a vampire Nazi Frankenstein shooting a machine gun shaped like a guitar. You also have, and of course he's Franz Liszt, so he's a rock star, so he beds anything and everything that gets in his way. He signs a deal with a female devil. There's also a very famous scene of Roger Daltrey riding a giant phallus. Subtle is not in Ken Russell's forte. Oh, by the way, my other favorite piece of cameo casting, besides Oliver Reed, who is a regular, semi-regular in the Ken Russell films as a Russian guard, in the who else? Ringo Starr as the Pope.
I actually remember that.
That being said, I think everybody should go and buy this from Warner Archives for $20.
I'll run right out.
Thank you. Yeah. You'll run right to a computer. We got one right here if you want to order. So, yeah, that's into the archives. So definitely worth it's just a mess. It's a trip, and I love Ken Russell because that man was a lunatic with his own zip code. And, you know, whether it soared or it crashed, he did it his way. And there aren't that many filmmakers that have that. So I like him. He's a loony. So, Kobe. Yep. We're going to move on to the celebrity obits, or as the segment we like to call...
Doing our the annual show of dead people we like.
there's a pretty big one this week.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like. Yeah.
No, we don't. So I'm going to get through these fairly quickly. Terry Tracy. No, people don't know who he is. He was the inspiration...
Is he a that guy?
No, he's not a that guy. He was a regular guy who was the inspiration for the character... The Big Kahuna.
Really?
See? That's what we do here.
Oh, really?
This was a kind of professional California surfer guy, And many people said he was the inspiration for the character of the Big Kahuna, which started in the Gidget books, mm-hmm. and then played by, of course, one of the most believable surfers in cinema history, Cliff Robertson, which apparently this guy, Terry Tracy, hated the performance.
This before or after Charlie?
Before. Okay. Oh, before. Cliff Robertson, yeah. Neil, this was before PT 109, I believe. So, wow. Yes. But anyway, he was the inspiration for that. We thank him for that. Jake Eberts, or Eberts, E-B-E-R-T-S, referred to in the New York Times as an accidental film producer, he was a guy who helped get films financed. This is a guy who apparently his start in the business was he helped get financing for the 1977 animated film Watership Down.
Really?
Which, by the way, not a kid's film.
No.
Not a kid's film. Don't let the animated bunnies fool you. I learned that the hard way watching it in 1977. Hmm. Still a good film. But some of those guys, this guy had 39 films to his production credit, including Chariots of Fire, Driving Miss Daisy, and Dances with Wolves. So the guy's got 3 Oscar-winning films under his belt. Not nice. Bad. Other titles include The Name of the Rose, Hope and Glory, The Adventure of Baron Munchausen, Texasville, Black Robe, which I find fascinating because I think Black Robe is the same story better told than Dances with Wolves. City of Joy with Dr. Patrick Swayze, A River Runs Through It, James and the Giant Peach, Chicken Run, Two Brothers, America's Heart and Soul, Oceans, his last two films, The Illusionist, the French animated film that should have won Best Animated Feature, also the only film that Emma and I have cried at the same time,
wow,
at the same point. And his last film, the underrated Peter Weir film, The Way Back. Now, and I don't know if we're going to have time for the subject itself, but shark expert Ron Taylor, who helped work on the movie Jaws. And then I don't know if we're going to count this under Dead People We Like, but if you remember hearing of the Reverend Sung Young Moon had passed away, why am I bringing him up on film sociology? Because he financed a 1981 disaster war film, and I don't mean disaster in the earthquake sense of the word. It was a monumental bomb that my dad and I saw in theaters called Incheon.
Yeah.
This is a film, stay with me, everybody. Laurence Olivier as General MacArthur. Yes, he got $1 million, which meant the National Theater got better financing. But this is a film with Jacqueline Bisset, Ben Gazzara, Toshiro Mifune, Richard Roundtree. Yes, Rex Reed worked again, even after Myra Breckinridge, David Janssen. And it's about the Incheon battle in North Korea. All financed by the Reverend Moon. A terrible, terrible film. Bad, bad film. Directed by Terrence Young. Yeah, this is a film that you put its nose in it to see what it's done. It is bad. Really, really sad. But that being said, those things, Lisa, of course, is hanging out before she comes in. And there's a film for, first off, I want to say on behalf of Film Sociology, if the IIFF would like to crash at the Film Sociology guest house, you are more than welcome.
Okay.
So, but there is a film series you guys have coming up. So tell us about it.
We do. We kicked off a spring film series earlier this year, and so we're doing a fall series as well, sort of to bookend the festival in the summer. And this fall series is co-presented by Smallbox as a sponsor, and we're doing a music film series. And so we're doing 5 films starting on September 20th. We're starting with the LCD Sound System music documentary, Shut Up and Play the Hits,
yes,
which is freaking fantastic. And I just got word, actually, all of the films will be at the IMAX at the State Museum with,
ooh,
their sound, awesome, capabilities,
cool,
and everything.
Yes.
And we've got the film in, and they were testing it over there and everything, and it is apparently pretty fantastic over there, so we're looking forward to that. And there's 4 additional films. We're doing Almost Famous and Moulin Rouge, sort of bringing back some classics.
And Kate Hudson when she was tolerable.
Right. And then we're doing one called Just Like Being There, which is about gig posters. So for different concerts,
oh,
and posters that,
cool,
that folks make for gigs. And then we're wrapping up with a Sundance selection that is, it's called California Solo. It's a little independent film about an expat here in the States who's gotten in some trouble and is a washed up rocker trying to figure out if he can stay in the country. So 5 films Thursdays through November, $10 a ticket. You can go to indiefilmfest.org to get yourself set up for the fall film series.
Cool.
Yeah.
So there's lots to do here.
Lots to do.
Mike, what are you up to besides Irish Fest?
Well, probably gonna knock out a couple movies over the weekend. I know The mom wants to see Celeste and Jesse forever, so I may take her to see that.
Just a reminder, folks.
I'll just take her there. I'll go see Sleep Off With Me.
Just a reminder, folks. Any film in which you're divorcing Rashida Jones, you're an idiot.
Yeah, just terrible.
Yeah. And there was an article. I'll probably bring this up a little bit more next week, but there was an article in the New York Times about beachside movie theaters, especially in New Jersey, like Ocean City. We'll bring this up next week, but it also goes back to the thing about Jaws and summer movies, and so I think we'll bring that up next week. But nice. But think about your summer beach movie memories, not Frankie, Nanette, and Gidget memories, but you know, seeing movies beachside or near the beach or near the ocean. All right, Kobe, let's hear some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Lisa, Mike, thank you for hanging out and promoting NC-17 Cinema.
Anytime.
Long may it live.
You go to, what's the website again, IIFF.org?
No. IndieFilmFest.org.
What she said.
Go.
See? And then there's WFYI.org. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Go Lions, for crying out loud. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
We go. Good night, Fort Myers.
See you.